Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Kaf. Just before we start, I had on a CD this morning, actually, on the way to shul. Something that was kashur to what we've been learning. We learned on Daf Yud Zion 17. 17. Yud Zion Amud Aleph at the bottom. We learned over there that in order to be on the Sanhedrin, you had to be able to give arguments why Sheret was Tahor. So I was listening to Rav Offa Erez CD, and he was saying from a different Gemara, there's another Gemara where Rabbi Meir says, no, it's a story about Rabbi Meir, and then it says Maaseh Shaya. There was an incident that occurred that a person came and he found 150 ways to purify a dead sheret. Right? It's a different Gemara. I'm not talking about that, but it's the same. Right? The same union. So he said, "What's going on there?" So he said, "Purifying the tameh is the concept of the tzaddik. That's his job, right?" In case you haven't noticed, we're all tameh, right? And the job of the tzaddik is to purify us. Even the most tameh person, even the dead sheret, right? The most tameh he can purify. Anyway, over there he explains, Safka over there, he was talking about an incident, Maaseh Shaya, says in Tzaddik Vatik. Tzaddik Vatik share that found 150 tamim in order to Tamim mean reasons. Tamim to purify the sheret. So he says over there, what's this? So it says 150? That's the Tehillim. 150 Tehillim. So what's one of Tamim? It says Tamim, Tam, Nigunim. 150 Nigunim. So he says from the 150 he purified. So this concept of Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu came along and took the Tamim, the 10 Nigunim. From Tehillim, and with them purifies the tameh. Tovin, he says over there. He said a student came to him. This is if you're a gadol like Averis. I've never met him, but heard about him.
No, is that in English or Ivrit?
Ivrit, sorry. And anyway, so he says to us. So someone came to him. He was giving over this drasha, and someone came to him and said, I assume from the sound of it, he made the drosh himself. He was right. And someone came to him and said, "Where'd you get that drosh? Just because it's 150 in Tamim. So where'd you get to Tehillim in Tamim? Maybe it's not." So he said, "I went to my Sponitut. And I said, Hashem, show me a remez, show me a chizuk that I understood correctly." So then he said, "So then I saw that the Gemara over there uses the phrase, Maaseh Sheh, what did we say? Forgotten what I said now. The tzaddik, no, not tzaddik, vatik. Chacham tam, tzaddik, vatik. I can't remember the wording now, the lashon he used, but he used the wording that he quoted from the Gemara, which says Chacham vatik or tzaddik vatik or something like that. But he says it's an unusual lashon, you don't really see that. Batik. Why was it? What does it care? Well, what's the lashon over there? So he said, I was looking at that and I saw that the gematria of that, exactly equals Moshiach ben Yosef, Moshiach ben David. Exactly. Those two words, Sadiq Batik or whatever it was. He said, from now I knew that was correct. No question. So anyway, that was the drasha he gave. Speaks here.
Can I expand on that?
He's a student of Rav Berlitz. Right? He's a contemporary of Rav Arish. He speaks here in the yeshiva apparently every week as a shir in what shall I say?
I'm thinking of the seven beggars and the beggar with no hands and the idea of the 10 melodies.
Nachon.
Abling to cure the princess that was shot with the 10 poison arrows.
Right.
And he was able to shoot the arrows and draw them out.
Okay.
Using the 10 melodies.
Uh-huh. Okay. Keep going. So what do you want to say about that?
Well, it's the same analogy of a psychic being able to cure you by going in where you are and pulling out the poison.
Yeah, although interesting, in that one, the psychic shoots you first. He shoots you and then he cures you.
Yeah. There's a wonderful,
morning, Rabbi Yosef.
There's a wonderful book out called The Water Castle.
Uh-huh.
And Rav David Sayer, during Benjamin, who was covering part of that, and I picked up the book, and it's an incredible book covering The Beggar with No Hands.
Oh, yeah? Just on that?
Just on that one.
On that section of the story.
Right, right.
Wow. Tov, we have no idea how fortunate we are to be living in a world of where this is our milieu. That's a good word, isn't it? Milieu. Our medium, and not other things. Tov, let's learn a little bit of Torah. Mishnah, new Mishnah today, Bezrat Hashem. Halfway down the page, well, less, about a third of the way down the page.
Kaf, 20A1.
20A1. Kaf, Amud Aleph, third of the way down. Mishnah. So we just learned about the rules of the Kohen Gadol in relation to various matters, including what happens when they're in mourning. Now we're learning corresponding rules concerning the king. Some of the corresponding ones anyway, not all of them. Some of the corresponding ones. You there? Yeah? You got pictures, I see. You've got the illustrated version. Nice. When it comes to that, that's the bed. Whether or not you can turn over a bed or not. We'll get to that. Yeah, different types of bed. Maybe. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Met Lomet, if there dies to him a dead person. If someone close dies, we're talking about the king in this case, right? You don't know that because it doesn't say the king, but it comes apparent from the context. Einoyot say, be peta palturin shelo. He doesn't come out of his palace. We're talking about the king. Palturin, his palace. He doesn't come out of his palace. Just like we learned about the Kohen Gadol, that he doesn't come out of the Beit HaMikdash, so to speak, depends on which version you hold by. But so too, the king doesn't come out of his palace. That's the Tanakhama. But we've got an opposing opinion. Rabbi Yehuda says differently. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, in what Selatzet, Acha Amita, you'll say, if he wants to, the king can do what he wants. If he wants to go out after the funeral procession, he can. How do we know this? Shekem Matsinu b'David, because we found the same thing with David Amalek. Sheyatza acha mitato shel Avner. He went out after the funeral procession of Avner. We have that in the book of Shmuel. Shneema, like it says over there in Shmuel. V'amelech David holech acharei amita. There you go, it seems pretty clear. David Amalek did go out after the funeral procession. Amrulo, but they said to him, right, so the sages, the Tanakhama, Rabbanan, replied back to Rabbi Yehuda, and they say to him, Lo haya dabar ela lefayesh et ha'am. This thing that happened with David only happened to fayesh, to appease the nation. It wasn't a regular thing, it's not normal for him to do that. He wouldn't have done it otherwise. He wouldn't have left the palace. Dafka over here, he left to appease the nation, meaning that you can't learn from here. Normally he wouldn't have gone out. The king doesn't go out. What was going on over there in the book of Shmuel? Why was this appeasing the nation? So, apparently what happened is, after the death of King Shaul, who became king after Shaul? David?
After King Shaul?
After Shaul? First of all, it was his son, called his son. Shaul had a son. Everyone, like, I was going to say everyone. Me, if you like me, you assume that after Shaul comes David. But actually it's not. After Shaul comes David, comes Shaul's son called Ish-bosheth, who reigned as king for 2 years. And then he died. which is a good indication that that wasn't the plan, right? Ish-Boshet. Apparently, I mean, I don't know if that was actually his actual name or the name that the Tanakh scripture Chazal gives him. Maybe, right? It's embarrassing to kind of, probably the latter, but certainly the old scroll just refers to him as Ish-Boshet, as this that's shout his name.
Was there something like a civil war going on in those 2 years?
Yes, there were those who David at this time, after Shaul's death, was appointed king in Hebron. King, so to speak, king over the tribe of Yehuda. Yehuda crowned him king in Hebron. But in Yerushalayim, the kingship was being held by Ish-Boshet. So you can see already here that you've got the split. But it was only so to speak, small split. After he died, Ish-Boshet, David's followers sent word to the general of the army, the chief of staff of Ish-Boshet, who was actually before that, to Avner, to ask if he will let, right, you don't want to fight against the chief of staff, he will let David come and be king in Yerushalayim over all of Am Yisrael. Eventually he agreed, and 6 months later, so 2.5 years after the death of Shaul, David began to reign from Yerushalayim over the whole of Am Yisrael. It was accepted. But up until then, he wasn't. So what happened? So Avner, after the death of Ish-Boshet, relented, so to speak, and agreed that David should be king. So it's not clear, maybe, according to Chazal, he mamash relented. David forgave him. Right, it wasn't just an expedient thing that now the other king was dead to follow the new one. So what happened? So later when Avner died, so how did Avner die?
Wasn't he murdered?
He was killed. Right? He was killed by Yoav, the opposing chief of staff. Yoav was the commander of David's army. Right? Because he thought that Avner had rebelled against David. David was the rightful king. Avner had refused for 2.5 years to allow him to take the kingship, and instead he had sided with Shaul's son instead. So Yoav killed him for whatever reason. Something to do. Anyway, there were those who supported Ish-Boshet, right? When he was king of Jerusalem, he was the son of the king, son of Shaul. A lot of people supported him, that's why he was king for 2 years. So, when David's right-hand man, Yoav, killed Avner, it could have looked like, that there was trouble. So David wanted to come into the funeral procession to appease the people and show that he was very upset about the fact that Avner died, and it wasn't what he wanted. It was not on his instruction that Yoav killed him. So that's why he went out to appease the nation. Apparently not, as far as I'm aware.
So what happened to Yoav?
Yoav, he carried on being a chief of staff, head of the army, I think.
Wasn't someone killed at the end when David died?
After David died, he told his son Shlomo to kill what's his name? No, not Yoav. The one who cursed him. Yeah, Shimi ben Gera. Oh, Yoav too?
Yeah, because that's what I was thinking. I just remembered it. It's like.
That's for Yoav too. Okay. Yoav too. What? Hold on, we're actually late. actually, we're going to see later. Sorry, we're going to see later. The Gemara is going to give a different reason why Abner was killed. We're going to see, Reuven. We're going to see in the Gemara why Yoav killed Abner. It wasn't for that reason. There's a different. The Gemara brings a reason later. Why did Abner get killed? So we're going to see that in a minute in the Gemara. But Tov. So far that's the Mishnah.
Does Rashi see anything
on the Mishnah? Does Rashi see on the Mishnah? So I think that we need, it's going to help me anyway. So that's that. Okay, so so Rabbi Yehuda says, so Tanakhama says that the king doesn't go out of the palace when he's mourning. Rabbi Yehuda says he can, and he cites the episode with David as proof. Chachamim argue and say, no, that's not proof, because he was doing it to appease the nations. Mishnah continues and says, Ukishemavrin oto. Shemavrin means when they feed him. I don't know what the Lashon is, but Shemavrin means to feed when they feed him. I'm not sure what the root of that is, Mavrin. Shemavrin oto, when they feed him, that's the king, when they give him the first meal. Kola am v'subim ala aretz, v'hu meisiv ala dargash. All the people sit on the floor, and he sits on a dargash. Right? That contrasts with what we learned about the Kohen Gadol in his Mishnah, so to speak. The Kohen Gadol sits on a bench, safsal, and the people sit on the floor. So here, the people sit on the people lie on the floor. They don't sit on there, they're masubim. I hear they lie on the floor, and he may serve, he sits. He's not Masubim, I don't know, Masubim may serve, maybe same thing. Allah Dargash, on a Dargash. And the Gemara is going to say, what's a Dargash? And then to answer it, you've got lovely pictures in your book, which are different opinions about what a Dargash is. We're going to see in a minute what's a Dargash. It's a certain type of bed.
Dargash?
Tov. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara says. We learned in a brighter. Makom shenahagu nashim latzet acha amita yotzot. Makom, in a place, shenahagu nashim, where women are accustomed, latzet, to go out, acha amita, after the bed, after the funeral procession, yotzot, they should go out. So in a place where their women go out, it's the custom, women, the custom of women to go out, they should go out. Lifnei hamita yotzot, they go out in front of the funeral session. They walk in the front. Kilo and the men walk in the back. Well, that's the minhag. According to the footnote here, in Tosfot cited in the Yerushalmi, the reason for this is that women lead the funeral procession because it was them, so to speak, that it was the first woman, Chava, that brought death into the world. She brought death into the world. So they're the first to try and make the tikkun. Tov? Right, so we're going to see now that's the second opinion. So the first opinion goes on, it's far more important to rectify the world than to worry about that, and the second thing says no. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Lo lam, actually, or always, nashim lifnei amita yotzot. Or actually, women should go out, should always go out with friends. Hold on. Same thing. Also, actually, Rabbi Yehuda says, so why is he different? So he's different than the Tanakhama in this brighter. The Tanakhama in the brighter says, in a place where they are accustomed to go out, they should go out. But actually, Rabbi Yehuda says no, always. Lo'olam. That's the difference between him and the Tanakhama. He says always women should go out in a funeral procession in front of the mitah. Sheken matzinu b'David, because we find this with David. Sheyatzach mitato shel Avner, when he went out after the funeral procession of Avner. Right, we're seeing that this is important because it's what we're talking about in the Mishnah. What does it say over there? Sheemar v'amelech David holech acharei mita. You see that the king walked after the mita, so that he's learning out from here that if the king walked from behind after the mita, then it must be because he didn't want to mingle with the women who were in the front.
The first Tana Kama says they go acharei mita.
You're right. Sorry. So the Tana Kama, thank you very much. The Tana Kama says the women go out behind the mita, which is what we would expect. So they're in the back. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, I'm going to learn from a pasuk in Shmuel that they go out in front. Why? Because we see that King David went behind the mita. So if King David went behind the mita, for sure he wasn't there mingling with the women who were behind the mita. It must have been that the women were in front and the men were behind because of this drash. Thank you very much. Because of this drash that women brought death into the world and therefore they should go in the front. Right? Just like on the bus. Should you put them at the back of the bus where you don't have to look at the women, or should you put them in the front where they can fear for their lives because they brought they can they can talk. So we go by we go by Rabbanan, the Tana Kama. We don't go by the single opinion here of Rabbi Yehuda.
The reason
the women are in the back.
The reason they're in the back or just in the center is because the double doors in the handicapped entrance are designed also for strollers. You can't move the stroller through the front easily.
All right, but also in the back of a bus. But the main reason is so that men don't sit there gazing at the women, or at least the back of their mitzvahat. Because that's not so healthy. Tov. Okay, so that's that was the brighter. Right, two opinions. Right, and the second opinion is based on this verse that we learned in the Mishnah. Amrula, they said to him, right, the Rabbanan talking to Rabbi Yehuda, they said to him, Lo haya davar ela lefayes ha'am. This thing that happened with David, you can't take that as proof, because it didn't happen except to placate the people. Shayad David yotzei mibeina anashim v'nichnas lebeina anashim. Because David, he went out from amongst the men and went into the women's section. Yatsami ben anashim, and ichnasu ben anashim. Then he went out of the women's section. He went into the men's section, right? Shneim al pikuai, because it says later on in the pasukim, veidu kol ha'am v'chol Yisrael. Because in order that all of the people and all of Am Yisrael would know, ki lo ita melech la'mitet avner, that he did, right? He wanted to show all of them, so he had to show them all. That he was really sad. They could tell. If he killed him, he wouldn't be going out to his funeral crying. He'd be hip hip hooray and all that stuff, right? Shooting off the fireworks. Right? He wasn't. He was sad and he wanted to show that to all the people, including the women. Obviously, it was important too. And that's why he went out amongst them. And we know David HaMelech, he was a tzaddik. A tzaddik can do that sort of thing. Right? It's not a kasha steerer that he went out amongst the women. Tov. Drash Rava. Rava made the following drasha. What is that thing that's written? All the people came to feed David. Okay, so this is in a passage, right? Just in the same, talking about when David is in mourning and the people come to feed him, to give him the meal. So what's the drasha that Rabbi wants to make? Ketiv lahachrot, the Korinan lahavrot. It's actually written lahachrot with a chaf, but we read it with a bet, lahavrot. So the footnote points out that actually in our version of the Tanakh, it's written lahavrot. Might be there was an earlier version which was written lahachrot, but because maybe that we be reading lahavrot they actually just wrote it down as Lahavrot. But according to the Gemara, the original wording was Lahachrot, but Ketiv and Kri. It's written one way, but we read it another way. It's written with a Chaf, but we read it with a Bet, because that's the meaning, that's the Pshat meaning anyway. So why is it written differently if the meaning and the way we read it is something else? Why was it written in a different way? The Gemara, in order to give us a drash, like the Rav is going to say, the fact that we've written lachachot teaches you that, but tchila lachachotot, initially, lachachotot, to get carrot, to kill him. Ulasot lachachotot, but in the end, to feed him. Initially, they wanted to kill him, the people. They wanted to kill David because he went and killed the chief of staff, right? The head of Am Yisrael's army. You can't go and do that. He was beloved by the nation, fought all the wars of Am Yisrael. We've always been patriotic. We've always been very army-oriented. Sahal can't do any wrong, right? And the head, chief of staff, who's, right, can't just go kill him. Uproar. So they weren't very happy with David. So initially they wanted to kill David because they thought he killed him, but now he came out to appease and everyone saw that he was really upset. Oh, right, it wasn't him then. Top, they learned. So then they came to feed him. Oh, Hashem, he sorted everything out.
So what finally happened to the other chief staff that killed Abner?
Yoav, we don't know. That's your homework for tonight. To look in Sefer Shmuel. Do you have a copy of Sefer Shmuel at home?
Okay.
It's online if you haven't got it at home.
And
to see what happened to Yoav.
Does Rashi say anything? We should always cover Rashi.
First to kill him. She hayusabawim, that they thought she meito haita harigat Avner, that they thought that it was from him, from David, the death of Avner, that David caused the death of Avner. Ulavasof lahavroto, and in the end they came to feed him. Shiyadu habeiro shelo me'et David ne'rag Avner, that it became known clearly that it wasn't from David that Avner was killed. Okay. Next. Amar Rabbi Huda Amar Rav. Rabbi Huda said in the name of Rav, Mifnei ma ne'enash Avner, for what reason was Avner punished? Right? Avner's death, the Gemara is telling you here, the punishment wasn't stem. Right? He got punished. What was he punished for? Kilu not. Kilu punished from Shemayim, as opposed to punished by Yoav.
Killed.
Right, he was punished, he did something wrong. This was his tikkun. Who? Yoav. Yeah, it's like that in you see in Pirkei Avot, when you see the skull floating on the water, the one who killed you will also be killed. The one you killed, you died because you killed someone, and the one who killed you will also be killed. Tov, if he did it wrongly, obviously not, and he did a good thing. But let's see. So the first opinion is Mipnei she'aya lo limchot b'Sha'ul v'lo micha. What's limchot? To protest. He should have protested against Shaul and he didn't protest. Avner should have protested against Shaul. When should he have protested against Shaul? When he killed all the Kohanim in Nov. You can go to Nov today. They've got a very nice kosher guest house. It's a kosher kibbutz now. Nov? It's a kosher kibbutz. They have little guest houses if you want to stay up north. Quite a nice place to stay. Nov? It's near Mitch and Susie's guest house in Sipuri. Nov's the other side. I think Nov is Bli Neder. Nov might be the other side of the Kinneret.
Nice.
Yeah, it's on the right side. If you're looking at the Kinneret, about halfway down on the right is Nov. And it's very close to the Syrian border. Right, that side of the Kinneret goes very close to the Syrian border. And it's also very close to where the army practiced their military maneuvers, the bombing. So you have to be careful to not wander off on Tiolim. because there's a lot of artillery going on. You can hear them. We went on a teal. We stopped and went. There's a very nice teal. You see right side of the road. They have the Israeli National Forestry. What's that? What's that thing called? With the little, with the thing with the antlers. The bottle. Like the national parks, right? Well, yeah, they have their little sign with the in brown with the stag with the top. Anyway, so they have a nice one over there.
So we
stopped to get down to go down this apparently nice waterfall and whatever. And there's a sign as you get off in the car park: don't go this way. This way is a military firing zone, and this way is the. It's the national park, right? So we started to go down there, and apparently it was a big hot day, and they have a guy there in his little van selling ice creams and waters and whatever at the top. For the tourists, right? Top. We spoke to him, and he said, I wouldn't go down there today. He said, it's going to take you like an hour and a half to get down, and in this heat, trust me, it's not Kedai. So, Top, thank you very much. We turn around. But as you go back to the car, you can hear the firing for the military firing zone on the other side. It's like, mamash. Right.
How do we know this is the exact place as...
What?
As the old... As,
no.
You know.
How do you know it's the same place? Truth is, we don't. We assume that all these places are... There are some evidential records, like Beitar. How do you know Beitar is the same Beitar? Apparently there's a law someone told me, I don't know if it's true, you're not allowed to call the name of a place by the name of the old Tanakh name unless there's proof that was the name. Right, so...
So they
call it like Beitar Elit, so they're not sure it was Beitar. So they have to call it something else, apparently. You have to change the name to show that it's not, there's right. No evidence. Efrata Frata? It's called Efrata, no? Or Efrat?
No, it's called
Efrata. Uh-huh, so...
Because it was there,
right? Because it was there, right? Because there's evidence that was there. But other places where they're not sure. But I think Nov, I know.
So
I know.
Between archaeological and historical, and people have been living here forever.
Enough to convince the government, which I don't know how much that is, but top, it is whatever it is. So the archaeological evidence is very, very, very dodgy, very, very dodgy. I used to have an office in town. And one of my neighbors, American chappie, who I got to chat with, was an ex-archaeologist from, worked for the Israeli Archaeological Authority for like many years, 20, 30, 40 years. He was just retired. He was showing me he was just involved in a big court case. Some, in his words, forgers had taken artifacts and... forge them so they appeared to come from the time of Yoshki, so they could sell them and make a packet, right? And they were getting sued by the state for falsifying archaeological remains. Apparently it's a law, you're not allowed to do that, right? So he was one of the experts in the trial, right? Because that was his job. Anyway, so he was explaining to me how easy it is and how to falsify this stuff and how it's all right and how he knew. I mean, He knew what was right, but it was all very dodgy. The whole world of archaeology, he said, is very, very, very murky, very dodgy. It's not. It's all self-interest. It's all.
We know that it's bad. Something about the sun
and going to your hole. All right, the hole. Right.
Could say that. I'm creating the world with age, like Adam's age.
They find a half a coin that someone dropped somewhere. Say, oh, here was the site of the... Maybe. The office, who knows. Sorry. Should I carry on with this?
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's continue with our tour. What are we learning? So, Nov, yes. So, first opinion is that Abner was punished because he did not object when Shaul wanted to kill all the people in Nob. Why did the priests of Nob, the Kohanim, why did Shaul want to do that?
Because they gave aid and cover to David.
They helped David. deliberately, unintentionally. They were rebelling, they weren't rebelling. Anyone remember? They know that as far as they knew, they were acting correctly when who was it? Bli Neder, I think Yonatan maybe told them to give him help. I think Yonatan Bli Neder told them, someone from the king's staff, I think it was Yonatan, told them to help him. So they thought it was coming from the king, from Shaul. But Shaul was saying to help him. They weren't aware that he was fleeing from Shaul. Shaul was trying to kill him at this point. Because David was also at various points. David was the one that killed Goliath, that got promised all the riches by the king. So depending on he was a national hero. It wasn't necessarily that he was the enemy. Depends on what was going on at what time and what people knew. It's not that it was obvious that helping David was such a bad thing. And the people of Nob thought they were doing fine. They were doing correct. Anyway, it turns out that obviously that's not what Shaul wanted. And when he found out, he thought they did it intentionally. He was told Lashon Hara by Doeg. Doeg was stirring things up, causing machloket. Interestingly, I heard this. I'm doing lots of detours today, but why not? It's all good. I heard on the Shabbat that Korach, someone was giving a drasha about Korach, and he said that there's nowhere in Chazal, in Tanakh, in Torah, that it's asur to create machloket. He said there are the smag, and there's a minority opinion that there is. But basically, all of the opinions, Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, there's no isur on machloket. Why? Because generally speaking, machloket is also good. You have machloket l'shem shamayim, machloket lo l'shem shamayim. So machloket by itself, there's no isur on machloket, because sometimes it's good. You need to have machloket, because through machloket you get to the truth. It's a valid derech, right? But what is there an isur in? So there is an isur, and that is the hachzik machloket, to strengthen a machloket. Now that is an isur. Right, and he brought down the proof from where you see that. Right? And the Rambam brings that as the Isor Doraita Lahachzik Machloket. So, anyway, so over here, what's Lahachzik? That's joining in and stirring it up. If you're one of the parties, then you can always argue, L'shem Shemayim, I was trying to get to the truth, right? There was a problem here, I disagreed, I've got a different opinion, you're allowed to have a different opinion. It's perfectly valid to have a different opinion, if you're one of the parties. But if you're not one of the parties, and you can't argue at least it's L'shem Shemayim maybe, right? Then you're just mixing in, right? Then you're lachzik the machloket. Then you're guilty of, at least to some opinions, deraita lav, right? That you're strengthening a machloket, right? That you're not allowed to do. That's the Isor to the Torah. Because if you're not involved, stay out of it. Tov. So he was learning out that from the parasha. He's saying that why did Moshe come to appease Datan and Aviram? It says that he came to Datan and Aviram to appease them. It says in the parasha, that's why Rambam says it's an Isor Doraita. He brings that from the Pasuk. Right? Why Moshe came? Moshe came, first of all, he sent people to appease them, and they ignored him, they didn't want to come. So then he went himself. Why did he go himself? Because he didn't want to be over on the Avera of being of Machzik, the Malachot, by default. He came to appease them because he didn't want to be, by default, strengthening the Machloket by not trying to appease them. So that's Moshe. But he learned out from there that the Isur is to Lachzik, not to be involved. He wasn't involved in the, right? The machloket was Korach va'adato. It wasn't Moshe's machloket. But he didn't want to be guilty of lachzik it. So that's why he went out to appease him. Learn from there. Yofi. Anyway, so that's what we said about Shaul. That about Abner. That he could have protested and he didn't. Doeg was the one who started it, but he didn't protest. Rav Yitzhak says differently. Rav Yitzhak says, Micha v'lonena. No, actually, he did. Actually, I'm going to tell you, says Rav Yitzhak. They both have proofs for their opinion. We're going to see why they both say this. But initially we just get their opinion. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, no, Micha, he did protest. But they didn't. He wasn't listened to. Right? Shaul said, thank you very much for your advice. Avner, I'm going ahead and doing it anyway. Right? He did protest. Ushnehem mikre echad darshu. Both of them learn out from the same pasuk. Right? Both take the same pasuk and just learn it differently. How? So this is how, this is the pasuk and this is how they learn it. So the pasuk says like this. Vayakonen ha-melech el Avner. And the king, konen means lamented. The king lamented Avner. The king was sorry. He lamented over Avner. King David, right? We said lamented over Avner. Vayomer, and he said, Hakmot naval yamut Avner. How do you translate this? So the first way of understanding it is like this. So this is a pshat. Should Avner have died as if he was a worthless person, Hakamot Naval, meaning for nothing, for no value, for no reason, did Avner die? Right? Why should he have died? Yadecha lo asurot, v'raglecha lo lenachushatayim hugashu. Yadecha lo asurot. Your hands were not tied and your feet were not placed in chains. Speaking, metaphorically speaking, he was speaking to Avner, saying, why did you die for nothing? Why did you die for no reason? Your hands were not tied and your legs were not in chains. So that's the pasuk. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda and along comes Rabbi Yitzhak. And they understand the pasuk, both understand this pasuk two different ways. One uses it to Rabbi Yehuda, uses it to support his view that says that Avner did not protest. And the other uses it to support Rabbi Yitzhak, uses it to support his view that Avner did protest. How? So Gemara explains. Manda ma lo micha. The one who says that he didn't protest, right? That's Rabbi Yehuda. Hachi ka'amar. This is how it's written. This is how he understands that. Yadcha lo asurot. Braglecha lo nechushatayim. Agushu. Your hands were not tied and your feet were not placed in chains. Maitam alo machita. So why didn't you protest? If your hands were not tied and your feet were not in chains, you could have protested. You were the head of the army, chief of staff. You weren't tied up. You weren't someone who couldn't speak. Right? You had the ability to speak out, and you didn't speak out. Right? That's Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of the verse. And then he uses the follow-on from the verse, which says, "Kenfal lifnei b'nei avla nafalta." You have fallen like a man falls before the wicked. Right? And that's the reason you fell. You fell like a man falls before the wicked. Why? Because you had the chance to speak out and you didn't speak out. Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of those pasukim. Alternatively, Rabbi Yitzhak, Umanda amar micha v'lo ne'ana. The one who says that he did protest, but he was not listened to. How does he read the words? It's ma'ohi matama. It's ma'ohi matama. It's expressed like an astonishment, like a surprise. It's a surprise of a surprise. You read the words not as a question, but as a surprise, with a different inflection. Hakamot navel yamut. David was surprised and he said, could it be that he died like a worthless person? Yadecha lo asuwa, ragecha lo lenuchashatayim. Your hands were not tied and your feet were not enchained. You weren't tied up like a lowly person, like a person who is chained. Mikiti machoi machita. From here you can see that you did protest. He's asking in an astonishment, how can it be that you died when it's clear that you protested? I'm surprised that you died, David is saying. My tama, what is the reason? Kinfo lifnei b'nei avla nafalta. What's the reason that you died like a person dies before the wicked? I just like in the Tehillim where David asks rhetorical questions, how can it be that the wicked prosper in there, right? So he's asking over here too, how can it be that you died like a wicked person dies before the wicked? It's not right. I'm not happy with this. Right? That was his lament, that the people understood from him that he was sorry, that he wasn't part of it. He was asking, how can this be? That's what the Pasukim are coming to tell us. Okay. Laman de ma'amicha. Now the one who says that he did protest, like Rabbi Yitzhak, like we just learned. Ma'itama i'anish. So if that's the case, he did protest. So why was he punished? Right? Why did he have to die? Amar Rav Nachman the Rabbi Yitzhak. Rav Nachman, the son of Rabbi Yitzhak, maybe it's the same Rabbi Yitzhak, not sure, said, Sheshiha Malchut David, Beit David, Shtei Shanim Vachetzeh. The reason he had to die, Avna, was not because he didn't protest. He did protest. The reason he had to die is because he delayed the Malchut of David by 2.5 years. Right, like we said. He delayed David coming to the throne by 2.5 years. He could have let David come to the throne after Saul's death. When Saul died, it's really up in his hands now who becomes king. He's basically in charge of what happens in the country. He's chief of staff, he's head of the army. If he would have wanted David to be king, he could have let it happen. But he didn't. He thought, erroneously, but he thought Ish-bosheth should be king. And because of that, he needed a kapara. His kapara was to die early, maybe 2.5 years early, who knows. I'm not sure if you can make an exact drasha from it, but he had to die early. Now, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, so we'll stop there for today. We'll carry on with the Dargash tomorrow.